I want to take up in volume 13 at September the 2nd, 1921. One who goes out of the divine will goes out to meet all miseries. They're all the miseries of the human will. Louisa said, I was lamenting to my dear Jesus because of these blessed writings, which they want to put out. That means to publicize. And she said, I felt as if I wanted to withdraw from his will. And so my sweet Jesus told me, my daughter, what is this? You'd want to withdraw from my will, but it's too late. You see, this is volume 13. And in volume 1, Louisa had 3 spiritual marriages. So she's locked into union with God in an absolutely extraordinary way. But what we're looking at is Louisa's feelings being expressed. And so Jesus clarifies for her the difference between your will and your feelings. It's too late to go out of the divine will, he said. After you yourself bound yourself in my will, and my will bound you, but with double chains to itself in order to keep you safer. So Louisa agreed to these spiritual marriages. So she agreed to this covenant with God. A spiritual marriage is a covenant, and a covenant is a spiritual marriage. And God has been trying to have covenants with the human race from the very beginning, as we saw with Abraham, as we saw with Moses, as we saw with King David, and so on. So he said, you bound yourself. That is your yes, your fiat. And we know that she made that fiat in the divine will. My will bound you with double chains to itself in order to keep you safer. You have lived as a queen in my will, because he's the king. You have accustomed yourself to living with most delicate and nourishing foods. That's all the food that comes from Jesus' own love and his revelation of the divine will to her. Indomitable by anyone, but dominator of all, even of yourself. In this union in the divine will, one of the extraordinary things is that we become masters of our own self. And this makes us very different to the vast majority of people on the earth who can be slaves to their own bodies, or slaves to their own feelings, or slaves to materialism, or power, or whatever it is. And so anybody living in the divine will is free. God makes you free. And free of yourself is the greatest freedom of all, because the self is the greatest enslaver on the earth. You're the dominator of all, even of yourself. You're used to living with all the comforts, immersed in immense riches. Now, listening to Louisa talking about the amount of suffering she's been through, you'd never think she was living with comforts. But of course, she has these daily visits from God himself. How many of us have the Lord coming to us, throwing his arms around us? How many of us have the Lord saying to us personally, so that our ears can actually hear it, I love you with an immense love? We know he does love us, but we haven't had this comfort. Louisa had had an awful lot of comforts. And you've been immersed in immense riches. They're all the extraordinary graces and privileges that have been given to her. If you go out of my will, you will notice immediately, as Adam did in Genesis 3, that as soon as you go out of it, you will feel all the misery, the coldness, and the lost dominion. That's exactly what chapter 3 of Genesis tries to tell us. The absolutely extraordinary change that happened instantly to Adam and Eve when they went out of the divine will. All goods will disappear from you, and from being a queen, you will become the most miserable servant. Let me give you John 8:35 there. Anyone who sins is a slave, Jesus said. You yourself, upon feeling the great contrast that exists between living in my will and going out of it, you will plunge yourself even more into the depths of my will. This is why I say to you, it's too late. And then you would take a great contentment away from me also, because it is such an unusual thing for the Lord to have somebody really surrender to him, that that's his joy on the earth, that somebody loves him like this. So the secret for us, whenever we are having difficulties or doubts or temptations, is to simply plunge ourselves totally into the sea of the divine will and stay there. Don't think about abandoning yourself. Just dive in and just keep saying to him day and night, I abandon myself to you completely. I abandon myself to you completely. He hears it the first time, but you might hear it the 20th time. He takes it on board the first time you say it, but it might take you a much longer to get it through to yourself. So the Lord can say to us, yes, it's too late. Because once you make this commitment, absolutely permanent changes happen in the kingdom of God. And if it's in the divine will, it's permanent, eternal. And so Jesus said, you must know that I acted with you like a king who begins to love a friend who is very dissimilar to him in status. Now, this story that's going to be told now, you will find in Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 4 to 19, as the origin of the vocation of the chosen people. We are nothing of ourselves. It's what he makes of us. So here's a king begins to love somebody who is very dissimilar to him in status. So the king is the ruler and this person he chooses to love is a nobody. But his love is so great that he has decided to make the friend similar to himself. Though he's the king and he's got all this power. He can do this if he wants. Now, this king cannot do everything at once and render his friend like himself. He has to do it little by little. Now, this is very important. None of us can take sudden change. We find psychological and spiritual and even physical change quite difficult. You will know that if you've ever moved house. You'll know that if there ever has been a bereavement in your family. Sudden permanent change is very difficult for us and takes us quite a time to adapt. So if the Lord is to make us like himself, he can only do it piece by piece so that we will adapt and not go into a crisis. That's why he has given us this revelation of the divine will now in 13 volumes. And yet, you know, we will only be halfway through his message when we get to volume 18. He's giving it to us piece by piece so that we can step into it as he reveals it to us. So the Lord prepares a royal palace for his friend. That's John 14, verses 1 and 2. I'm going to prepare a place for you, and there's room for everybody in my Father's house. Because that's the extraordinary thing about God, is that his love is universal and his love is without boundaries. It even includes you and me. So he first of all prepares a royal palace for him, similar to his own. And he sends the adornments to dress up this palace or adorn this palace. He forms a little army for him and then he gives him half of his kingdom, so as to be able to say, what you possess, I possess. I am the king, and you also are king. But of course, he's king with a capital K, and we're king with a little k. Because we have to learn how to be king over ourselves first. However, each time the king would give his friend his gifts, he would look at his faithfulness. In other words, that's the test. And you know from the scriptures that every single friend of God has been tested. If you haven't been tested, I would worry. He would look for his faithfulness, be faithful and attentive. And giving the gift would be for the king an occasion for a new contentment, greater glory and honor for himself, and a new feast. In other words, love lives by giving. And so he rejoices when the friend is willing to accept the gift that is being offered. Now, if the king had wanted to give to his friend all at once, that which he had given him little by little, he would have embarrassed the friend. Because the friend was not trained to be able to dominate. It would be too much. It's like our image of Cinderella. One minute she's sitting in a kitchen looking after the most basic things in a house, and the next minute she's dressed as a glorious princess marrying a prince. Human beings are not able to adapt to that kind of transformation all of a sudden. And so Jesus says here, no, you wouldn't be able to do it. You wouldn't even be trained to rule. But little by little, through his faithfulness, he has been instructed, so everything's easy for him. So if you get it incrementally, you can adapt almost without even thinking. And you can accept things then that you wouldn't have been able to accept if it was all given at the same time. So I want to give you Psalm 85, verses 10 to 13, that righteousness come down from heaven and it looks for faithfulness to come up from the earth. So Jesus said to Louisa, this is what I did with you. Having chosen you in a special way to live at the height of my will. Now, the word height there means at the summit. We would say the summit of a mountain. Mountains can be different height. So in English, if you want to talk about the tip top, it's the summit. So I wanted you to live in the summit or in the fullness of my will. I've instructed you piece by piece, little by little, making it known to you. And as I kept making it known, I enlarged your capacity. You see, only the Lord knows what he's doing. And each time he gives us another grace in the divine will, he opens more space for himself in our soul, in our interior. He enlarges our capacity to take what he's offering, so that when we remain faithful and we accept gratefully whatever he gives to us, that we grow and grow and grow and grow, and in the end we can take huge gulps of something that in the beginning we couldn't even have taken a sip of. Our capacity has become greater. So as I keep making this knowledge known to you, I enlarge your capacity and I prepare you for further and greater knowledge. So in other words, the little universe inside of you begins to expand and grow. And of course, the more it expands and grows, the more it can develop and the more complex can be the new creation that God does within us. Every time I manifest to you one value or one effect of my will, I feel a greater contentment, and together with heaven, I make feast, because now the new Jerusalem is being built on the earth, even if it is only in one person at this particular point, which is Louisa. Now, as these truths of mine go out to be spread among other people, you double my contentments and my feasts. Therefore, let me do. He keeps pleading with her to give him the freedom to do what he alone can do. And you should plunge yourself more into my will. Now, the secret for us is simply to abandon ourselves to the divine will. Don't think about it. Just do it. Be like the child who stands on the diving board in a swimming pool, and instead of saying, oh my God, it's 20 feet down to the water, what will I do, what will I do, what will I do? The one who succeeds in the dive is the one who doesn't look, takes a deep breath and jumps. And then they're in the water, completely abandoned to the water. Then their skills at swimming can go into place. But if we keep thinking and thinking and thinking and doing novenas about surrender to the divine will, I don't think we're going to get there. Close your eyes, take a deep breath and go. And say to the Lord, I jump. I jump now. I jump now into the deepest depths of your divine will. I don't care about the consequences. You'll look after that and you'll look after me. But jump and give your God great joy. You should plunge yourself more and more into my will, Jesus said. So, September the 6th, 1921. As the truths are known, new union with Jesus is formed. Jesus wants to make known what his will did in his humanity in order to constitute the new generations as heirs of his will. Now, what Jesus is going to say to us here is that he has not come to continue the usual revelations that he has given to other saints. He revealed his passion to other people, like Anne Catherine Emmerich, just to take one example. He has revealed immense things about his mercy to Sister Faustina. He revealed wonders about the Sacred Heart to Margaret Mary Alacoque. Other saints have received wonderful things. He's not repeating himself. God never repeats himself. He wants to do something new. He always wants to do something new. He always wants to let his creativity have an outlet. So here he is going to reveal more and more things to Louisa about the interior life that he had in his divine will during his life on earth and eternally, and how he wants that to be manifested in us so that the church picks up the living in the divine will. Up to this point, the church has lived in the humanity of Jesus, through him, with him, and in him, as we've been told. But it was the humanity of Jesus. And we have looked at the passion from an external viewpoint. Now we've got to go deeper and we've got to go internal. Before it was ad extra, now it's ad intra. And he wants to take us there and he wants us to participate. So, Louisa said, I was fusing all of myself in the divine will. Do you see we're at this again? I fuse all of me in all of you all the time. I was fusing all of myself in the holy will of my sweet Jesus, and I said to him, my love, I enter into your will, and here I find all the thoughts of your mind and all the thoughts of the people from Adam to Zachary, everyone on the planet. I surround your thoughts with my thoughts and with the thoughts of my brothers and sisters. And then, because you can do anything in the divine will. The divine will is the creative power of God. And we need to sort of grasp the extraordinary power we have in the divine will. So she says, I can access your thoughts in the divine will. I can access the thoughts of every human being from Adam to Zachary. And now she said, I want to unite these two sets of thoughts together. I want to make them one in order to give you, Lord, the homage, the adoration, the glory, the love, the reparation of your own intelligence. Isn't that wonderful? There's your prayer. You don't need to be any cleverer than that. And while I was saying this, my Jesus moved in my interior. Now, moved in my interior means the kingdom of God is already there. So that's Luke 17:21, and it's 1 Corinthians 3:16. You'll hear me say that over and over again to remind you that Jesus is operating from within her, so the kingdom of God is within, as Luke 17:21 says. And he said, inseparable daughter, now inseparable because she's had three spiritual marriages. She is living in the divine will. She's not living in her own will. And so she has gone over to the heavenly dimension of life. And in the early volumes, you only ever heard Jesus say that his mother was his inseparable mother. Now he has a mother on earth because he called Louisa a mother from volume 2. And he's now calling her his inseparable mother on earth. Now, we also have to move to the place where he can call us his inseparable brides. Inseparable daughter of my will, he said, how happy I am in hearing repeated what my humanity did in my will. So when Louisa joined the thoughts of the human race to the thoughts of Jesus and in the divine will brought them together to unify them and then offer them to God. She was doing what Jesus had been doing. And that's what we have to do. We have got to look, understand, repeat, and echo him. Inseparable daughter of my will, how happy I am in hearing repeated what my humanity did in my will. And I kiss your thoughts in mine, your words in mine, your heartbeat in mine. Now, your thoughts, because she has fused herself completely in him. Your words, because that's the prayer that she's offering. And your heartbeat, that's the love with which she's operating. And as he was saying this, he covered all of me with kisses. So there you have the divine lover. And I said to him, my life, why do you enjoy so much and make feast every time you manifest another effect of your will? Now he's already told her. But Jesus knows that we're going to need to hear this over and over ad nauseam before it really registers with us. And so he said, you must know that every time I manifest to you one more truth about my will, it is one more bond that I form between you and me. He's already told her about these bonds. And I form them with the human family. Why? Because in the divine will, we are led to connect the thoughts of the human race to his thoughts, the words of the human race to his words, the actions of the human race to his, to try and bring about that union that needs to happen if we're going to have the second Pentecost. You must know that every time I manifest to you one more truth about my will, it's one more bond that I form between you and me and with the whole human family. It's a greater union each time. It's a tighter link each time. It's a sharing in my inheritance, he said. Now, it's the child who gets the inheritance, as you know. And people living in the divine will are the true children of God, Romans 8:19. So you can put Romans 8:19 there. The true children of God. And as I manifest these truths, Jesus said, I form the deed of donation. In other words, he's saying that the more he manifests of his divine will, the more he is saying to us, I will give this kingdom to you. All you've got to do is listen, learn, put into practice and call that kingdom into being and do your bit to let it happen on the earth and he will do the rest. And as I manifest these truths, I form the deed of donation, and in seeing my children richer and sharing in the inheritance, I feel new contentments. In other words, we make him very happy. It's the same with me as with a father who possesses much land. And this land is actually unknown to his children. I mean, what's the point in telling a three-year-old that your father has 100 acres of land? The child doesn't know what an acre is. And the child thinks that the first field outside the house is endless. So the child doesn't have a concept of a massive farm. The child doesn't have a concept of hundreds and hundreds of cows and sheep. It can see a few of them, but it can't see the whole herd. And that's the way we are, that somehow we know we're on the farm. We know that we're the children of the family. We know we have this relationship with the Father. We know that there's a great inheritance out there, but we don't grasp it at all. We don't have an idea. So the land is unknown to his children. They do not know that they are the children of a father who is so rich. I often describe Catholics as people who sit outside of a bank that they own, starving to death. Because when you look at the way we behave in church, we have been told so much about the Holy Eucharist, and yet do we grasp what it's about? We've been told about the wonders of the Holy Rosary. Do we grasp it? We've been told that Jesus is present in the Blessed Sacrament. Do we grasp it? If you look at the way people behave, you'll realise they don't. They don't even believe it. They just think it's a nice idea. A reality? That God is with us? No, they don't get it. They don't realise they are children of a Father who is so rich. Now, as the children grow up and come of age, the Father keeps telling them day after day that he actually owns such and such a farm. So it's not a major farm that he owns. He owns the whole province. He might even own the whole country. And that farm is mine, and that farm is mine, and that. And children begin to realise, my goodness, we had no idea. On hearing this, the children make feast, and they cling to the Father with a greater bond of love. In seeing the feast of the children, the Father makes feast and prepares for them another greater surprise, saying to them, such and such a province is mine. So it isn't just we're living on a farm. He isn't just a lord of an area. Such and such a province is mine. And then as they're able to somehow take it on board, he says, such and such a kingdom is mine. Who is this man that we have been calling Father? The children begin to realise they didn't know their Father at all. That's our tragedy. We don't really know God. And at some point we need to open the whole of our being to him and say, Lord, show yourself to me. Let me know who my Father is. Let me know whose child I am, so that I may rejoice and that I may participate in your kingdom as you want. So, as the revelation gets deeper and deeper, the children are enchanted. And they not only celebrate, but they believe themselves fortunate to be the children of this Father. As we grow to realise that we're the most fortunate people on the planet, knowing about the divine will, knowing how many others won't even consider it. And the Father not only makes his possessions known to his children, but he constitutes them heirs of his goods. We're not only children, we're heirs. That's the incredible thing. And you get that in Romans 8. We are not only children, we are heirs. Now, the same happens to me, he said. Up until now, that means the 19 centuries before he began dealing with Louisa, I have made known what my humanity did. That's the old era. I made known its virtues and its pains in order to constitute the human family as heir of the goods of my humanity. So that was stage one. Now I want to move forward. So 20th century, new era. And the new era is being revealed first. It has to be revealed, otherwise we can't move into it. Now I want to move forward. So I want to give you, therefore, Isaiah 43. I can't remember the verses at this moment, but it says, there's no need to remember the past. Behold, I'm doing a new thing. Even now it comes to light. Can you not see it? I want to move forward, and I want to make known to humanity what my will did in my humanity, so as to constitute the new generations as heirs of my will. So the extraordinary thing is that Jesus is talking to Louisa at a time when they have worked their way through the First World War, and they're in this terrible period between the First World War and the Second World War, where everything is going downhill on the earth. And here he is, making a completely new era. It's just incredible. Okay, so I want to give you Jeremiah 29:11. where he says that if you come to me and sincerely seek me, you will find me. And he's creating this new era. Okay. I am making something completely new and wonderful for you. So there's humanity tearing itself apart and he creating something new and wonderful for us. So you see the way God's love is working, and you see the way humanity's sin is working. The contrast is unbelievable. So he said, I want to move forward, and I want to make known to the human race what my will did in my humanity, so as to constitute the new generations as heirs to my will. Now, up to the 20th century, the church and the true believers were heirs to his humanity. Now we're going to be heirs to his divine will. Now, of course, I don't have to tell you, we have done zero and a million percent below zero to deserve this. As Paul tells us in his letter to the Romans, that where sin abounds, grace doth even more abound. So that's Romans chapter 3, around verse 20. So, therefore, he said, be attentive in listening to me and do not lose anything of the effects and the value of this will of mine, so that you may be faithful, a faithful relator of these goods, the first bond of union with my will and of communication with the other creatures. He is going to set up this kingdom. Louisa is going to be the first, because our Blessed Mother is in a completely different place. So Louise is going to be the first. And it's like as if the foundation stone is put in with Louisa, and then the other stones are gathered around her. And he begins to build the house. But only he can build the house, because the Psalms tell us, unless the Lord builds the house, they labour in vain who build it. There's nothing. We can't do it. It's his work. And we saw in Matthew 16 that Jesus said to Peter and the apostles, no, I will build my church. And then on Mount Tabor, Peter showed how little he had heard. And he said, I will build for you three tents. And God himself had to stop him. He said, listen to my son. Only Jesus can build this kingdom. It's his kingdom. And he has paid for everything. He's the only one who has rights. The rest of us have privileges. And so the enormity of the privilege involved should make us die of gratitude for just simply that he has your name on the list. So let's take September the 14th, 1921. Each time the soul does her acts in the divine will, she grows more and more in sanctity. This means that the level of sanctity that you reach is entirely in your hands. Now, we're used to being told in this coronavirus pandemic that your health is in your hands, your safety is in your hands. But the sanctity that we reach is also in our hands, because it depends on the number of acts that we're prepared to do. So Jesus said to Louisa, my daughter, each time the soul does her acts in my will, she grows more and more before me in wisdom, in goodness, in power, and in beauty. Now that's something, isn't it? To grow in wisdom, goodness, power, and beauty. That means that we are being reordered into the divine image. I want to give you 2 Corinthians 3:18 for that. That we become like that which we worship. And it's each time. So, in fact, as she keeps repeating her acts in my will, she takes more bites of wisdom and goodness, etc. Now, picture little children in a family. And mother has made very nice goodies. And she has put them in small little buns and cakes, but she has wisely cut them very small so that they're bite size. And she puts them on a plate in the middle of the table. And then you just have to watch. She sends the children out into the playroom to go and play, or out into the garden or whatever. They find 102 excuses for coming into the kitchen. And when she appears not to be watching, another little bun disappears. And another one. And another one. Until they're all gone. That's what Jesus is doing with us in revealing these wonderful truths to us. He's putting these bite-sized buns in front of us and watching, pretending he isn't watching, and smiling as we come along and say, "Ooh, I like that." I certainly like growing in wisdom and goodness and power and beauty. I don't know about you. And the soul grows with the food from which she feeds herself. These are the bite-sized pieces that Jesus is giving us in each one of these messages. But unfortunately for me, I could spend forever on one of them. And I have to keep going because I have to give you a comment. You could stay forever on any one of these things. This is why in the Holy Gospel, it is written that I grew in age and wisdom and grace before God and man. That's Luke 2:40. Why? Because he was doing the acts in the divine will. He was doing them for us. He was actually rebuilding humanity, making a divine version of each one of us. As God, I could neither grow nor decrease. My growth was just in my humanity, which growing in age came to multiply my acts in the supreme volition. That's what I said. And what we have to do is imitate, re-echo, repeat. And each additional act I did was additional growth in the wisdom of the Celestial Father. So, where do we get the wisdom in order to be able to teach divine will material to new generations? We get it by chewing this bite by bite and by accepting this in the depths of our being, because it's only then you will be able to share it with others. But you will reach a point that you will be so full that if you don't share it with others, you'll burst. You must share it with others. The Lord knows what he's doing. He said in John 7:37-39, come and drink. Come and drink. If you really want it, come and drink. And he said, out of your own heart will flow fountains of living water. Now, fountains of living water means plenty of food for others. Fountains. There will be a continuous flow. And Jesus continues, this growth of mine in age and wisdom and grace before God and man was so real that even creatures noticed it. In the end, people will notice. They will gradually notice that you are very different to other people. They'll notice your peace. They'll notice your calm. They'll notice your humanity. They'll notice there is something about you. They'll notice you're different. They'll begin to come to you looking for advice. That is a recognition of the wisdom and the discernment. In other words, they do actually tell you you've grown. Jesus continues, each one of my acts ran in the immense sea of the divine will. And as I operated, I nourished myself with this celestial food. I want to give you John 4:32. Where Jesus told the apostles that he had food to eat that they knew nothing about. And then he continues to tell them, my food is to do with the will of the one who sent me. His food was the divine will. Jesus continues, it would take too long to tell you of the seas of wisdom and goodness and beauty and power that my humanity swallowed in every additional act it performed. Now, why could he swallow whole seas of wisdom and goodness and beauty and power? It's because he was the sinless one. He was the Son. And he was God. He could take the whole thing. Try and imagine someone being able to drink an ocean. Look at the capacity that's in his soul. And so by comparison, we're not even a drop. And yet that little drop can increase and increase and increase as we do our acts. And so, having told us about how he grew himself, Jesus says, the same thing happens to the soul. My daughter, he said, sanctity in my will grows in every instant. Can I say that again? Sanctity in my will grows in every instant. There's nothing that can escape growing. And that the soul, there's nothing that the soul cannot let flow in the infinite sea of my will. The most indifferent things, sleep, food, work, etc. They can all enter into my will, and they can take their place of honor as agents of my will. So don't think that you've got to be saying acts all the time. You've got to be conscious of operating in the divine will and conscious of operating at the divine level. And every now and then you need to remind him to remind you that you're staying fused, all of you, in all of him all the time, so that everything, thoughts, words, actions, motivations, desires, everything, everything is on his level. It's divine. So you're operating in the divine will, having your lunch, sweeping the floor, washing the dishes, pulling up the weeds in the garden, whatever. If the soul only wants it, everything from the greatest to the smallest action can be occasions to enter into my will. And this doesn't happen when you're on the level of the virtues. Because if you're operating the virtue of obedience, you need somebody to actually give you an obedience. If you're operating on the level of patience, you need someone to make you feel impatient. But with the divine will, it's all the time. Every nanosecond, I think it's brilliant. In fact, if one wants to exercise the virtues, many times the occasion is missing, as I've just said. If the soul wants to exercise obedience, it takes someone to command her. And it may happen that for days and weeks, there's no one there to give you a command. Therefore, as much goodwill to obey as she might have, poor obedience has to be idle. The same with patience or humility and any of the other virtues. Since these are virtues of the low world. Now, the low world is earth. And the low world also represents a lower level of spirituality as well. And it's slower and it's more ponderous and there's an awful lot more struggle in it and everything. Whereas living in the divine will is living as an eagle, living at the highest level of your being, living up in the mountains in the glorious air of God's divine breath. So the virtues are virtues of the low world, and other creatures are needed in order to exercise them. On the other hand, my will is the virtue of heaven, and I alone am enough to keep the soul in every instant in continuous exercise. Therefore, in this time of lockdown that we're in, it's a most extraordinary time of grace. God has put us all on retreat. It's the most wonderful thing. I don't know about you, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. On the other hand, my will is the virtue of heaven, and I alone am enough to keep the soul in every instant in continuous exercise. It is easy for me to keep her up above night and day in order to keep her exercised in my will. So up above is where the eagles live. Down below is where the squalling seagulls are fighting for food on the ground level. So it's up to us whether we want to be an eagle or a seagull. September the 16th, 1921. Jesus is mocked by Herod. How these pains are renewed by creatures. I was doing the hour of the passion in which my sweet Jesus was in the palace of Herod, clothed as a madman and mocked. And he told me, my daughter, not only then was I clothed like a madman, sneered at and mocked, but creatures continue to give me these pains. Even more, I am amidst continuous mockery and by all kinds of people. If a person goes to confession and does not maintain his resolutions not to offend me, this is a mockery that he makes of me, because the confession is not valid at all unless we have the firm resolution of amendment. If a priest confesses, preaches, administers the sacraments, and his life does not correspond to the words that he says and to the dignity of the sacraments that he administers, he mocks me as many times for as many words as he says and for as many sacraments as he administers. That's very frightening. While I gave them new life in the sacraments, they give me scorn and mockery. And by profaning them, they prepare for me a garment to clothe me as a madman. Isn't that frightening? If superiors command sacrifice, virtue, prayer, and disinterest to their subjects, while they conduct a life of comfort, vice, and interest, these are many mockeries that they make of me. If civilian and ecclesiastical leaders want the observance of laws, they are the first transgressors. These are mockeries that they make of me. Isn't that fantastic? Oh, how many mockeries they make of me. There are so many that I'm tired of them, especially when they put the poison of evil under the cloak of good. That's one of the things that Jesus could not take was hypocrisy. So I want to give you Matthew 23, but I also want to give you Matthew 15, and I think it's verses 1 to 10. It's the whole of Matthew 23. And Jesus uncovers the dreadful hypocrisy of the spiritual leaders of Israel in his own day. It's not any different to today. And so while Matthew 23 and Matthew 15, 1 to 10, it's not comfortable reading. It actually exposes one of the reasons why the church is very, very sick today. Very sick. Hypocrisy really means that you wear the clothes of a religious person and you say religious things and you do religious actions, but you are not serving God. You are serving yourself, or you're serving the world, or even worse, you're serving Satan. In other words, you're an actor. We all know that the habit doesn't make the monk. It's the monk that makes sense of the habit. Oh, how they make fun of me, Jesus said, as if I was their amusement and their pastime. But sooner or later, justice will make fun of them. In other words, when the cup is overflowing, justice will come. And the immense, immeasurable mercy of God gives us more and more and more time to repent. I think this lockdown time is time to repent, time to get our act together, time to go serving God, time to go seeking God. Sooner or later, justice will make fun of them by punishing them severely. They should pray and they should repair for these mockeries that they give me so much. And they are the cause for which I do not make myself known for who I am. Here Jesus is saying something that is all over the Old Testament. And that is the prophets of old made it perfectly clear that whenever the chosen people got into trouble with God, In other words, they fell into idolatry and the sin that goes with it. Or they got really worldly and into world politics and all this kind of stuff. Whenever that happened, the prophets laid the blame squarely at the feet of the priests, the so-called prophets, the ones that were paid by the king, and the leaders. So the religious leaders and the political leaders. It is exactly the same today. The people won't go astray if they have good shepherds. The worst thing that can happen is that you don't have a good shepherd. Afterwards, afterwards, coming back again, Jesus, as I was fusing all of myself in his holy will, told me. Now notice, she's just had a revelation from the Lord and she's had three spiritual marriages. And yet she is personally, consciously fusing herself in the divine will all the time. That's the key for us. It doesn't matter where you think you are in your relationship with God. It doesn't matter how wonderful you think your relationship with God is. We have got to keep up the fusing. Jesus said, "Dearest daughter of mine, I anxiously await your fusions in my will." Now, how important is that? You must know that as I thought in my will, I kept moulding your thoughts in my will, preparing the place for them. As I worked, I moulded your works in my will, and so with all the rest. Now, whatever I did not do for myself, since I did not need it, I did it for you, you meaning the human race. This is why I await you in my will, so that you may come, all of you, not just Louisa, all of us, and take the places which my humanity prepared for you. That's John 14:2. In my Father's house, there's a place for you. And over my mouldings, come and do yours. In other words, echo and repeat. Only then am I content and receive complete glory when I see you do what I did. I'm going to stop there this time.